This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The stock market is once again nearing record highs. Economic data like retail sales and jobless rate, that looks good. Trade deal with China, that could become a reality. Yet there are other signs. That inverted yield curve in the bond market, the Fed just cut interest rates. You don't normally see that in a healthy growing economy. And more than half of the CFOs in the United States expect the country to enter a recession before the 2020 election. That's according to a survey released this week. And economies in Germany and China, they're slowing down. So should we be concerned? What's the conventional wisdom about a recession? And for you out there, tell us, how's business? Is your retail space vacant? Are you investing in growth? Are you hunkering down and hoarding your cash? We're talking about what the outlook looks for a recession and what exactly that means. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined by Heather Long, economics correspondent for the Washington Post. Heather, welcome to The Source.
Hi, Dave. Good to be here.
Mark Giannone is here. He's a research director at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Mark, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And Keith Phillips joins us in the studio, professor of economics at the College of Business at the University of Texas at San Antonio, and assistant vice president at the San Antonio branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And Keith Phillips, hi.
Hi.
Great to have you here. Heather Long with the Washington Post. What is the outlook from your perch in Washington, D.C., as you cover these things? When that inverted yield curve story broke, people were like, people took that seriously, right?
That's exactly right. In August, there was heightened fear that a recession, not that it was coming like in September, October, November, but that a year from now, we could be in a recession. And so that inverted yield curve, it's a technical term, but it's something that has happened usually about 18 months before a recession hits. So there's a big debate about whether it's as strong of a signal as it used to be. But when it happened, there's a reason a lot of people, particularly on Wall Street and in Washington, D.C. and the White House, were pretty panicked. I think sitting here a month later in September, a lot of the data that has come in since then has been good. As you noted earlier, the stock market, it has rebounded. It was down in August, but it has rebounded sharply and is now almost at another record high. So a lot of those fears that were there a month ago have lowered a little bit. And I'd say most economists that I talk to will tell you they don't think that there will be a recession in the next year. But, and this is the big but, they do think the economy is clearly slowing, and whether it slows a lot or a little, it depends on the trade war and, frankly, on how much Christmas and holiday shopping all of us do this year.
Mark Giannone with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. So we know what to dress up for Halloween, dress up as an inverted yield curve, because apparently that really makes people freak out.
Yeah, I mean, there is an empirical regularity that actually Keith Phillips, who is also on the call, has documented in the past, that relates that inversion of the yield curve with subsequent slowdown in the economy and a recession. Now, the question is whether this time is different and to what extent we can act to prevent an inverted yield curve to result in a recession. So I think we have to look a little bit at the fundamentals of the economy. And as Heather was pointing out, I mean, the economy is strong, has been in a strong state for quite some time. It is slowing, and we've anticipated for quite some time, actually, that the economy would be slowing from 2018 to 2019. The big question now is whether it slows just to a level that's consistent with its sort of, longer-run sort of normal rate of growth of the economy, which to some extent makes the continued expansion more sustainable, or whether the slowdown is going to be more pronounced and may lead us in a recession. I think We don't anticipate any recession at this point. We really don't anticipate like a slowdown to be too marked, but we note the slowdown. Yes.
So Keith Phillips, explain what is this inverted yield curve? This is in the bond market, and suddenly people are behaving different when they're buying bonds?
Yeah, so the yield curve represents yields on primarily U.S. government treasuries as you go out into further time frames. So different people use different yield spreads. Traditionally, people have looked at the 10-year 3-month. I tend to look at the 10-year 1-year, but others have looked at other things. And each one of them will tell slightly different stories, but the 10-year 3-month and 10-year 1-year last month were both negative and both kind of suggest that somewhere between 8 and 20 months from now, we will get some type of recession. Historically, that's been the case. Since the mid-50s, the yield spread, the 10-year, 1-year, has only turned negative once without a recession, and that was in the mid-1960s. So that's why people are concerned.
And Heather Long at the Washington Post, people, when they talk about that the inverted yield curves signal, it maybe not be as strong as it used to be because of quantitative easing in the Federal Reserve. Does that work?
I think the easiest way to think about it is right now the U.S. economy is one of the strongest in the world. And so what's happening is people all over the world are buying U.S. bonds in ways that we just didn't see before. And all of that buying from other nations and from investors all around the world is basically helping to push is helping to invert the yield curve because it's causing some of the longer dated bonds to go down. The easiest way I like to explain it, you know, is like this. If a neighbor came to you and wanted to borrow money, and you said, okay, I'll loan you a little bit of money, and the neighbor said, okay, well, you know, should I repay you in 2 years or 10 years? Like, if you were going to loan this person money for 2 years, you know, that's probably more of a sure bet. They're still going to probably be your neighbor. You know how to knock on their door and get your money back. Versus 10 years is a much longer time. A lot can happen. And so you would probably charge that person a higher interest rate or you'd want more collateral. And that's how it usually works in the bond market, that the shorter dated bonds that are a couple of months or 2 years are usually priced at a lower interest rate than the ones that are 30 years or whatnot. And we're kind of seeing the reverse of that in August. And that usually only happens when there's a lot of fear about a recession, a lot of fear about where the economy is going to be in, say, the next 2 years. And so, you know, again, that's normally how it works, but there's this weird phenomenon going on where all of these buyers around the world are pushing down those 10-year and 30-year type bonds in ways we haven't seen before.
So this is being driven by the perception of the bond buyers, and they are getting signals, but maybe their signals are not the right signal. So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. What is a recession? Why is this something? How would it impact you as a consumer, as a business owner, as an investor? What should you be watch out for, and how could you prepare for it if you think that this is something that could happen? Or if the growth economy continues, how do you position yourself for that as well? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You hear all these words thrown around with people talking about the economy and talking about bonds and recessions and quantitative easing and inverted yield curves. What does all that mean? Are you just worried about, you know, is my paycheck going to be there every week and will it clear the bank? Well, it's all related. And in our personal economies, you know, what to do if you're going to buy a new car, a new house, durable goods, all those things, you need to probably have to have some awareness of where the economy is going in order to make pretty good decisions about your family's financial well-being. So we're talking about that today. And the number to call in if you've got a question or comment, 210-614-8980. And Sue is on the line, and let's get her on the air. Hey, Sue, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. Could political bias in reporting be influencing the misinformation or the heightened information, regarding a coming recession?
All right, Sue, thanks for that. Heather Long, a economics correspondent for The Washington Post, could there be a political bias in reporting a recession in order maybe to try to create one?
Yeah, it's a great question. There is no doubt that a big part of the economy in the United States, 70% of our economy, depends on consumer spending. And consumers tend to spend more when they feel good about where the economy is today and where it's going to be a year from now. When people aren't worried that they're going to lose their job or that their paycheck might get cut. So in that sense, in economics, when I was in the classroom years ago, they had a term called animal spirits. They would say, it's always hard to quantify these animal spirits. It's these feelings about how the economy is doing. But that plays a surprisingly large role in economic growth and how the overall economy does. And so the caller is absolutely right that those feelings that we all have about how things are doing is key to what's going to happen in this economy in the next year. Look, is there bias among reporters? I mean, this stuff, I always tell people this, and I've worked at and lived and grew up in Trump country and also now live in Washington, D.C., which is definitely more Democratic leaning. So I would just say this. Every human being has certain biases, and there's no doubt that those are reflected in their writing. And nobody is ever, unless we get robots to write the news, there will never be a totally bias-free article out there. That said, I would like to think I and others spend a lot of time trying to write in a way that's not influencing the economy. The reality is, who cares about whether it impacts the 2020 presidency? What you really care about is if we go into a recession, millions of people in this country could lose their jobs, including our friends and family. So I think it's a little bit hard to argue that reporters are cheerleading for a recession when we know the impacts that this is going to have on real people across this country.
Mark Giannone, the research director at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. I know one of the indicators that y'all track when trying to figure out if a recession is coming is how frequently the word recession actually does pop up in reporting. But can reporting about bad economic times create bad economic times?
So I think Heather was exactly right when she said, the consumer is a big part of the economy. It represents 70% of GDP, and much of consumption is driven by people's fears and anxieties and conversely on their confidence and all that. So to the extent that people read the word recession a lot and they that becomes kind of the headline, and it may lead people to become a little more prudent and cut down on some of the expenses that they would otherwise make and save a little more. And it's totally rational for every individual to do that as they prepare for what they feel might be a recession. But that in and of itself might actually contribute to a slowdown in the economy and possibly a recession. Now, that said, whether it's politically motivated or not, I have strong reservations about that. I don't think that the politics are so important as to cause recession in at least these days. There's a lot of data that comes out from various statistical agencies. They are being checked by numbers in lots of people in the private sectors. They are scrutinized in great detail. Financial markets respond to any bits of data instantaneously. And these are financial markets from all around the world that are looking at the data that comes out in the U.S. and elsewhere. And they're responding based on what their assessments of economic conditions are going to be, regardless of really what the political nature of that is going to be. So I think there is a lot. There are lots of data out there that everyone tries to stifle through and sort out to figure out whether we are going to be in a recession or not. And it's really hard to make a political argument out of those.
Heather Long with Washington Post, you mentioned job losses if there is a recession. How does that work? What happens in a recession that leads to people losing their jobs?
Yeah, it works like this. Businesses, they stop investing, and we're seeing some of that happening this summer because of concern over the trade war. And, you know, if you're a business owner and you've already cut back on your purchases of equipment and decided maybe not to build that or buy that new property, well, what's the next thing you're going to start cutting back on? You know, the next thing is you stop hiring, and we've seen a little bit fewer job postings out there than what we saw a year ago. So some early evidence that companies just aren't advertising as many job openings as they were before. And then the next thing that you do, and you really hesitate to do this, but the next thing that could happen is you would actually turn around and lay people off because you need to shrink your business. You know, other people aren't buying as much from you, and you have to turn around and find those cost savings somewhere. And so that's how we end up with layoffs. We see that in every recession, even if it's a, quote, mild one. There's still usually several million people, if not more, who lose their jobs.
And Keith Phillips, are recessions natural? Do they just happen? Is it like winter? You have spring, so you're going to have winter. Do you have to have a recession?
Well, if you think of two states of the economy, expansion and recession, the recessions are the unusual part, the more difficult part to explain, because a lot of people are vested in expansions. People want to work so they can consume. Businesses want to make profit. So there's the natural state is for the economy to grow. And then these recessions happen, which are unusual, and economists like to say they're caused by shocks, which doesn't mean much to most people, but it's some kind of thing that throws off the economy. A lot of the newer theory of business cycles suggests that the economy can be at a more vulnerable state at certain points in time of the business cycle. And we had an article recently out by the Dallas Fed that suggested the economy is vulnerable when corporate profits begin to fall as cost pressures rise and profit margins get thinner, that, say, a shock to oil prices or some other shock could cause a lot of businesses start to fail, and that's when you see the job growth decline until the economy can start on an upward path, sometimes through monetary or fiscal policy. But if you ask which is the natural state of the economy, it's growth, obviously, and recessions are somewhat unusual.
And shocks to the economy. So I'm wondering, Heather Long, if the trade war could be a shock to the economy that could provide a lack of growth.
Certainly, if you talk to just about any business leader, they will tell you they are very concerned about the economy, and it is impacting the way that they think about how much to invest and potentially how much hiring to do or firing down the road. I think in particular, when we talk about shocks, what really, I would say, shocked business leaders and business owners was when the president threatened to shut down the border between the United States and Mexico at the end of May and early June. You know, I think people they can adjust to a trade war at the end of the day. A tariff is just a tax, and people can adjust to higher taxes. But that just seemed like it came out of nowhere for a lot of people, this threat that they were going to shut down the border entirely. And I think that's really where the shock angle is coming from. It's not, yes, the trade war has some detrimental effects. The economy could probably get beyond that. But there's an added layer of uncertainty from this president where people feel like they don't know what the end goal is here, and they feel like there's just too many chances that a tweet the next day could just do something that totally you know, totally unravels your plans. Like, even if you're a company, you're doing what the president says, you're trying to get out of China and move your production to, say, Vietnam or Thailand or India, what's to stop the president from turning around the next day and then tweeting that those countries are now off limits too? And that's where I think this has really become more heightened than even the White House realized would happen.
And Heather Long, if there is a recession, it's a big if, but if it does happen, is there a concern that we don't have the tools that we would normally have in order to battle the recession? Cutting interest rates, we're already cutting interest rates. The deficit's already pretty high. It'd be hard to come up with more of a huge stimulus, I guess. And there's some questions of, you know, confidence. And if there's a sort of you know, zany political leadership, does that hurt our confidence? I mean, so if there is a recession, would we be able to get out of it?
Well, we like to be optimists, I think, in the United States, so we hope we can get out of it. But I think you're exactly right. That's a huge fear among economists, among people on Wall Street and here in Washington, is this notion that our usual toolkit to address a recession, it feels like we're missing some instruments, or some of the usual instruments have been blunted. And you ran through a bunch of them there. I'll try to be quick. Usually, as soon as the economy is looking a little dicey, we see the Federal Reserve cut interest rates. But consider this, the interest rate was sitting at around 5% just before the financial crisis hit in 2008. And right now, interest rates are at 2%. So we have a lot less of that tool to use than what we normally would have before. And of course, you hit it on the head. So you say, okay, well, if the Fed can't do as much, then let's turn to Congress and the White House. Well, obviously, they don't always get along very well. And on top of that, with the deficit so high, where it looks like we're going to definitely hit $1 trillion deficits next year and may even hit it this year. And so there just isn't as much money left to spend that rainy day fund that you would have liked to spend before. So you're right. It's very concerning to people that if things start to really go south, what do we do about it?
And like the caller we had earlier, Heather, asking about political bias in reporting, if the general public has a jaundiced view of what they're being told about the economy, they think that there's politics is tainting the reporting. That hurts too, because you talk about consumer confidence. We have to have confidence in what we're being told about what's happening in the world.
I think you're right. I did a story in August that was shared millions of times. It was called "The Trump v. Obama Economy in 15 Charts," and we got a lot of readers on that, a lot of shares, and I got emails and calls from around the country from people telling me, thank you for giving me the data in an unbiased way. And so my belief has always been that people can respond to facts. And one of the great things about being an economics reporter is you can present them with charts and data, and you can let them make their own decisions. You know, is business investment falling? It sure looks like it, but here's the data over a 10 to 20 year period. How does it compare today versus 10 or 20 years ago? And so I think, generally speaking, there's a real hunger for that kind of information in this country.
And we also need that information to be coming out of the Department of Commerce, right?
That's right.
And there's
so
questions about how well that's being operated.
I think you're right. I will say, you know, I think you got to credit a little bit, or maybe not credit, but
the professionals, the ones who've been there, the lifers, yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of concern that the Trump administration might try to cut funding for some of those statistical agencies, or that they might try to influence the data collection process. So far, that has not happened, and I think that's a very good sign. And all the people who are working in those agencies, you know, they've been there a long time. They're not political appointees. They serve, you know, 20 years, 30 years.
They're dedicated public servants, for sure.
Right. That's right.
Heather Long, I'm going to have to let you go. Thank you so much. Economics correspondent for The Washington Post. We're going to continue our conversation about the recession, learning more about what it is, how it works, why we need to be concerned about it, and also about our regional impact. You know, how vulnerable is South Texas to that? The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the economy. What does it look like from your perspective? And what do you want to know about the recessions that have happened, or history of recessions? What happens when one comes to our neighborhood, the likely one that one could happen again? What could you do to prepare for one financially? We've got some experts here that are ready to answer your questions. Number is 210-614-8980. Mark Giannone is the research director for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Keith Phillips is a professor of economics at the College of Business at the University of Texas, San Antonio, and assistant vice president of the San Antonio branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. So, Mark Giannone, you're with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. So, you have a sort of a Texas-focused view of the economy?
So, we have we do an analysis of the economy both globally for the nation as a whole, and then we have some special focus on Texas and on our district, which covers part of Louisiana as well and New Mexico in addition to Texas. And then we focus as well on various sectors like the energy sector and so on.
So how does this region, how has it done in previous recessions?
So overall, when the recession kicks in the U.S. as a whole, it tends to bring down like all, lots of parts of the country, not all, but lots of parts of the country. What's a little bit unusual about Texas is, of course, the energy sector that in some ways moves, may move in a different direction than the rest of the nation. So in particular, when oil prices go up, that tends to hurt consumers around the country as they feel they have to pay more on gasoline expenses, for instance, and other oil-related products. In contrast, in areas that are intensive in energy production, that can provide some stimulus to the local economy and induce those sectors to produce more. So that leads maybe the sector to react and evolve in a slightly different way from the rest of the nation, and Texas can benefit from that.
And Keith Phillips, with the San Antonio branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, how has San Antonio typically fared during some of the previous recessions, like the big one we had, the Great Recession, from about 10 years ago?
So let me just talk about Texas real quick, and then I'll go down to San Antonio. Since 1971, the U.S. economy has spent 77 months in recession, which were six recessions. And Texas has spent 57 months in recession, 20 months less. We've had five recessions. A lot of the times, Texas will line up with the U.S. in a recession, as Mark mentioned, though, that Texas, if there's a big oil price shock, Texas might not have the recession. And in the mid-'86, when the oil prices fell sharply, Texas went in recession, the U.S. did not. But in general, Texas has spent less time in recession since the 70s. However, since the year 2000, we've had two recessions, and Texas and the U.S. were quite aligned. Now, for the Great Recession, Texas entered the recession later. The U.S. started the recession in December of 2007. Texas entered the recession in August of 2008. And partly the reason why we were lagged coming into the recession was oil prices were high till about mid-2008. So the energy sector was still being stimulated in Texas. So if there's no big change in oil prices, then Texas moves along pretty closely to the U.S. If there's a big shock, either upwards or downwards, then Texas can behave differently than the nation.
And in San Antonio, our economy has been military, a big part of that, and also medical, right?
Yeah. So San Antonio has more industries. Their key industries, healthcare and federal government through military. Those two industries are big in San Antonio, and they tend to be very less cyclically sensitive. So San Antonio doesn't do as poorly during recessions, and during expansions, real strong expansions like the last couple of years, San Antonio hasn't grown as fast either. But San Antonio is not recession-proof, but we don't typically get as hard as many areas of the country during a recession.
And one thing people worry about is, and we saw in the last recession, that there can be like a freeze on cash availability. And banks stop lending, right? That's a concern. And so should people, if you're in business, you should be aware of cash flow. Is that?
Well, the last recession was a financial recession, the Great Recession, and that was atypical. Most recessions like we had in the early 90s and 2001, those were fairly mild recessions, and we didn't have the financial issues that we saw during the Great Recession. So it's unlikely, very, very unlikely, I think, for us to have another financial crisis. For example, consumers are in pretty good financial shape right now. If a recession did occur sometime after mid-year, I doubt it would be a financial crisis like we saw at the last one. So banks won't be impacted, and we won't see the crisis we saw last time. So I don't think that will be an issue this time.
And Mark Giannone, with the research director at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, what does it mean that the stock market is nearing record highs? Is that really something that we should gain confidence in about the economy, or maybe it should scare us?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Stock market overall depends on essentially two things. One is the expected future dividends that you are going to collect from the companies that whose stock you own, and then it depends also on the expected future path of interest rates. So the higher the interest rates, basically the more you discount these future earnings that you are going to have in the future, and so the lower that tends to push the stock market. So as we see stock prices relatively elevated, well, it indicates, there is a little bit of a question here as to why these stock prices are so high if people are at the same time not so confident about the state of the economy. Well, I think the answer to that is that interest rates being relatively low, for all the reasons that we discussed earlier with Heather, are contributed to basically maintaining stock prices at the level that they are. So as a whole, I think this is one indicator about among many indicators. Stock markets tends to fluctuate quite a lot. It can have periods where it's relatively elevated, periods where it falls a bit. It's one of the very volatile indicators. So households, I guess, benefit from elevated stock prices through their pension funds, through various assets that they hold, and that can give them some confidence to allow them to consume more, and that's helped sustain the economy. So there is one way in which elevated stock prices can help sort of sustain a strong economy. At the same time, households don't seem to be responding too strongly to change in the stock market either. So if the stock market falls by a few percentage points, people's response don't seem to be really too strongly related to that. So they may still retain like a relatively strong consumption. So I would say as a whole, having an elevated stock price, is that something that should be a cause for worry? I think at the levels that we are now at, it doesn't strike me as being something to worry too much about.
I wonder about having – we're having multiple economies that exist simultaneously. So we have people who are like extremely wealthy and they have a lot of money and they're looking for places to park that money and grow that. And there are other people who are just middle class people who are living day to day. And are we getting an adequate picture of what the overall state of the American economy is for, for the middle class family? By looking at these economic indicators, do those numbers really cover everything, or are the numbers indicators being thrown off because we have such massive outliers these days? And Mark, I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you make a very, very good point. I mean, looking at the aggregates and looking at the stock market, for instance, is definitely not a good summary of everything that goes on in the economy, and so that's why there is a lot more attention being paid these days than in the past about like different groups of population, how they behave, what are the data that characterize them, and so we look very carefully at labor market indicators for different segment of a population, looking at those with low income, those with higher income, look at the way people allocate their savings. Of course, if you're a lot wealthier, then you'll have to put a lot more of your income in the form of saving and not consume all that much more than everyone else. And then if you're on the lower income side, you'll dedicate most of your income to consumption,
right.
And you won't have many resources to save a lot. So we worry about these. We look at these factors like in great detail, and
so we have to think about the economy overall as one big thing, and also how it impacts individuals across the United States and here in San Antonio. We certainly want to know what people are experiencing. Tell us what you think about the economy. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the state of the economy, at least what can we tell about the state of the economy, looking at the traditional indicators that we have available to us. Some of them look really, really good, like the jobless numbers and the stock market looks good, but there's also some troubling signs out there. So what should we make of that, and how do we prepare for that? Mark Giannone is with this research director at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Keith Phillips is here. He's with the San Antonio Bank branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. So in the last recession, a lot of people lost their homes. There was a housing component to that recession. Keith Phillips, what's the housing market look like right now? Anything in there that looks troubling?
Yeah, I think housing markets obviously are in much better shape than were in 2006 and 2007 prior to the Great Recession. The reaction to that, to the Great Recession, was to put on a lot more checks and balances in home lending. And I think that is going to help us out if a recession occurs again. If you look at excess inventories in the housing market, they're way below historical averages. I think this year, given the decline in mortgage rates, you might have expected more, a greater demand for housing. But
so you would have think that there would have been more of a blip, like, hey, because we cut interest rates, mortgage rates are down, more people will get into the housing market.
Yeah, I would think with mortgage rates has fallen as much as they did this year that you would have seen more growth in home demand and new home building. But I think people are being conservative. I think they're, because of the impacts of the Great Recession, even if you didn't own a house during that period, your parents probably did, and a lot of people remember how much housing prices fell. So I think there's some quite a bit of conservative things going on in terms of home building, and I think consumers are in good financial shape, and I think there hasn't been any real excess in home building. So I think the housing market always falls in recession, but it won't. If there was a recession coming up, it wouldn't be anything like what happened.
Because that was like a wildfire.
That was an unusual event, yes.
All right, let's go to the callers, 210-614-8980. Elise. Hi, Elise. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. Well, I just wanted to share that I'm actually having a more positive outlook on the economy. I'm an artist starting an arts and crafts event in November. So with that, I'm actually hoping people will come out and buy. And each time I have another artist join me at my event, I think they're also counting on people going out and buying things. I think just to live in fear of what might or might not happen isn't great for the community, because then no one's going to do anything. So I'm kind of worried that just even hearing the word recession on the radio might have a negative effect on, like, a self-fulfilling prophecy to what people might or might not do in the future.
Right. Elise, thank you for calling in like that, telling us your view. Mark Giannone with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Consumer confidence, a major part of keeping the economy rolling along. And that's a self-fulfilling prophecy in and of itself, right?
That's correct. That's right. But I think there are lots of good, I mean, to Elise's point before, I think there are lots of good reasons for the consumer confidence to be high. We focused until now a lot on the negatives, but the unemployment rate is really at a 50-year low. Lots of people around the economy can find jobs. It's easier now to find a job than it has been, again, for the past five decades or so, at least judging by the unemployment rate. That means that a lot of income is being generated every month, and people, you know, can bring a paycheck home, and they can buy all sorts of things that they want to buy. So that sustained consumption, that sustains consumer confidence. Keith alluded to the interest rates having come down and mortgage rates having come down. It makes it more. It helps on the affordability front to buy a house if you want. So I think there are lots of good reasons for people to be confident. That said, there are these clouds on the horizon due to the only uncertainty in terms of trade, in terms of like the world economy as a whole. And these are risks that we monitor very closely, and we are trying to factor in our analysis.
Now, looking at those unemployment numbers, and they are marvelous. However, you wonder, drive down a little bit deeper. People who are working, are they making enough money? You may have the job, and so you click, yes, I have a job, but are you being paid well enough? How are wages doing, Mark Giannone?
Right. No, that's a great point. There has been a lot of discussion in recent years about like the lack of wage growth. But actually, if you look at the data, you know, the wage growth, you know, was ranging around like 3.5%, 4% before the 2008-2009 crisis. And then they came down in the aggregate. Wage growth came down to about 1.5 to 2% after the crisis. So every year, on average, wages were growing at that rate, about 1.5 to 2%. Now wages have been ramping up again in recent years, and so they, for those who try, employers who have a lot of vacancies and try to hire wages, they know that they have to offer like higher wages to attract workers. Now there is a lot of like separation there on this labor market. It really depends if you're on the low end of the or the wage scale, on the high end of the wage scale, on the middle side of the wage scale. And for a lot of people at the low end now, we've seen some good acceleration in their wages, which is great, which you know helps with them also being able to sustain their consumption. We see also a lot of like wage growth on the high end of the wage scale. We see less so in the middle range, because a lot of the jobs that are in the middle range are also jobs that are threatened to be restructured and sort of replaced by machines or other, you know.
Sure, yeah, automation. Let me go to another caller. Donica is on the line. Donica, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I was just calling to see how I work in the retail industry, and I've noticed a trend has been really slowing down. So I just wanted to know your comments and thoughts on that.
Okay, Donica, thank you for the call. Keith Phillips with the San Antonio branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas.
Yeah, and I think it depends on where you work in retail. Certainly brick and mortar is really undergoing a structural change with
online sales.
Because
people could still
sales.
Be buying, but they're buying from Amazon.
Yeah, overall personal consumption expenditures is really one of the reasons why GDP growth has held up. So the consumer is still spending. They're just not going to the mall. They're spending more and more online.
But I see, you know, like the Payless stores, they went out of business, and you see them vacant, and you see a few other vacant places. And, I mean, look, driving down the road, it looks like a recession, but the money is flowing. I just don't see it, Keith.
Yeah, the money is flowing. And in any, even in a healthy, very healthy economy, competition drives out some sellers and others replace them. But right now, retail, you know, kind of brick and mortar is really struggling as people shop more and more online.
And they're shopping online because it makes sense for them and they get deals. And you know, when things are cheaper, that's a boost to the economy as well.
Not to promote anything, but free two-day shipping really has changed the ballgame. I mean, you can buy it and get it right away, and you don't have to pay for shipping. A lot of people are taking advantage of those type of deals.
Right. So, Mark Giannone, this is an important question I think about all the time. The economy that we have today is not the economy that we had 10 years ago. It's a different animal in many ways, although the fundamentals are the same. And we have very rich people with a huge pool of cash. I wonder how that impacts the overall economy performance and how they would react to certain factors. So how do y'all change for that? How do you adapt for that?
Well, yeah, the economy changes all the time. There's a lot of innovation coming in. There's always, we've moved. I mean, if you take the very long view, we've moved from a very agricultural economy to a much more sort of manufacturing economy to a much more service-oriented economy and all that. So all of these changes, but there are some, I would say, some the U.S. economy is relatively flexible, and it adapts pretty quickly in the sense that sectors that tend to get weaker over time, they tend to disappear, and people move to the sectors that grow stronger, and the wages adjust in the various sectors so that to incentivize people to move from one place to another. In comparison to many other countries around the world, the U.S. economy is very, very flexible and adjusts to that. So we try to follow these trends and try to understand whether the changes, like in the retail sector, for instance, now are more structural or they are more cyclical. I think Keith was right in the sense that it's more of a structural feature that's going on now in certain part of the retail sector, but that we see these changes all the time in the economy.
And Keith Phillips, what do you think people should know about the economy or the recession? It's going to be reported on. People are going to talk about it, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen, right?
So economists are frequently compared to weather forecasters. But actually, weather forecasting has gotten a lot more accurate over the last 20 years due to technology. And I think when we're talking about predicting a year ahead of time, it's always a lot of uncertainty there, and a lot of things can change. So I think you can be conservative, but be ready to adjust.
Right, and just because we report on a recession doesn't mean it's coming, so everybody just stay calm. All right, Mark Giannone, Research Director at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and Keith Phillips, he's a professor of economics at the College of Business at the University of Texas at San Antonio, Assistant Vice President of the San Antonio branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.